Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. We've got a lot of stuff to get into today. Of course, it is Monday, which means we'll be doing NFL overreactions later on, of course. And we will be doing a little bit of Lions talk, but obviously we covered the bulk of that on Friday's show, which puts me in a weird position of opening up this show talking about your Detroit Tigers.
That is a curveball, no pun intended.
I had a feeling you would say that, and yes, you probably weren't expecting that to be how we led things off today, but things happened in the world of Major League Baseball last night. Juan Soto agreed to a massive contract with the New York Mets. Like, the biggest deal I think it's ever been signed by any athlete, certainly that I can remember in my lifetime. Like, this takes that big extension Pat Mahomes got and makes it look like nothing. 15 years, $765 million.
Over half a billion dollars to play baseball.
$750 million, sir.
I should have stuck with it.
Right? Yeah, you and me both. Deal, of course, includes an opt-out after 5 years, but no deferred money. And ultimately, if Soto does opt out, the Mets can void the opt-out by increasing his annual salary in the final 10 seasons by $4 million, taking the total value to $805 million.
There, last time we did a census, there was 330 million people in the United States. That means he could give $1 million to every single person in the United States and still have money.
No, that's not how that works.
No, 330 million?
It would have to be 330, like, trillion to give $1 million to everybody.
1 million per person, that's 330. My math way off, eh?
Your math is terribly off.
Yeah, it is way off, yeah. Wow, yeah.
A dollar, yeah. $2 to everybody in America.
There you go.
We should really kick off the week by apologizing to Adam's math teacher. But still, massive deal. Like, this is more apparently than Tom Brady and I believe Michael Jordan combined made during their entire careers, like in actual salary from their teams put together.
Yeah, there's
Soto's getting that kind of money.
Yeah, there's a lot of money being thrown around for. I'm not gonna say thrown around because I mean, owners are not known for being. I guess some owners are considered to be kind of foolhardy with their money, but a lot of times they're not going to make an investment unless they can get fields if they can get a return. So obviously they think he's worth the money.
Meanwhile, what are your Detroit Tigers doing? Well, right, currently they're haggling with Walker Buehler about not wanting to give him a second year on a contract. That's apparently the sticking point. We're not signing pitchers for longer than a year. Now, granted, we're having this kind of argument with a pitcher who pitched to the tune of 5.38 ERA last year after missing the entire 2023 season. So why are we even arguing about signing him in the first place? And that the one guy that they've been chasing after and shown interest in, per Evan Petzold at the Freep, is Ha-Seong Kim. A guy who last year hit, checks notes, .233. With 11 home runs and a .330 OBP. A guy who's barely better offensively than most of your current roster. And this is the major signing that the Tigers are talking about making. Also, let's keep in mind, he's not probably going to be... He's still coming off an injury. He had shoulder surgery in September. He might not be back till June. And these are the big moves that the Tigers are looking to make. It really just shows you who in this league is serious about winning, serious about contending, and who very much is not. You're telling me this is the best we can do. I'm not saying that we have to go after, you know, we should have been in the running for Juan Soto, because that was never realistic, obviously. But what I am saying is we can't even talk about an Alex Bregman. Like, the best we can do is... Oh, wait a minute. Oh my gosh, we may have breaking news on the Tigers here. If I can get a confirmation on this. Looks like you may have just signed a pitcher. Like maybe a My real pitcher is probably questionable here. Let's see. Apparently, the Tigers have signed a one-year deal with Alex Cobb, a guy who he had pitched for. I know he spent a lot of time with Tampa Bay. He's last with the Cleveland Guardians, where he pitched the tune of a 2.76 ERA in three whole games that he pitched last year. A 3.87 year before that, in 28 starts with the San Francisco Giants, he had one shutout. As far as the WHIP of 132, I'll take it. 131 strikeouts in 151 innings. I mean, certainly a quality pitcher, but they only wanted him for 1 year. Like, this has been the thing. Like, they don't want to give up term, and term is apparently literally a year is all they're willing to go on anybody. There's also been interest shown in the aforementioned Buehler, Kyle Gibson, and Andrew Heaney for whatever any of those things might be worth. Kyle Gibson, I really hope not. He was always kind of... He was never particularly good when he pitched for the Twins. He had a couple halfway decent seasons with he had half of a decent season with the Texas Rangers and has been garbage everywhere else. I get that pitching chaos isn't a strategy forever, long term, but could we maybe aim the sights a little bit higher? But it just honestly it suggests to me that this team isn't serious about contending. You somehow made the playoffs last season. On a couple decent bats and a strategy of pitching chaos, the likes of which has never been seen in Major League Baseball. No starting pitchers, no problem. But meanwhile, that has happened. We've gotten through that. You won your first playoff series in over a decade at this point. And now I haven't even heard rumblings on a real offer made to Tarek Skubal, much less any word on a legitimate bat. Like, these aren't things that I've seen, and I don't for the life of me understand why, other than the obvious reason. Like, as much as I'm not trying to be the, Chris Sillich doesn't care about this team guy, it's hard not to feel that way when... You have a team that won a playoff series last year, and the most you're willing to do to build on that is sign one pitcher to a one-year deal, and we're not actually looking to be in talks with any real impact bat.
I stand by my theory, my conspiracy, that Ilitch is trying to keep price low. He wants to sell the team.
I don't want to think that way. I don't want to think that that's what's happening here. But
wouldn't you rather have a more ambitious kind of owner as opposed to one you've got now?
Fair, but who would that owner even be?
I don't know. There's got to be some millionaire who has a lot of money that wants to have a beautiful little project like the Detroit Lions, Tigers.
But what I'm saying is, in the short term, though, I don't want to think that this guy is just, like, he's that checked out because he's trying to offload and be done with it, because that's really going to make for a depressing next couple seasons that we're just doing the whole austerity thing because you want to offload the team. Like, that doesn't make me feel good about what you've got right now. Yeah. It really makes me think that they're going to let guys walk, and then the next owner is going to be walking into a complete dumpster fire of a team.
Right.
I do not want that. That's the last thing that I could possibly want here. But yet, that's what I'm worried I'm going to get.
It's the only thing I can think of, other than maybe he's just looking at it from a business standpoint, not a game standpoint, where kind of like what we accused the Lions of being for so long. Is you don't need to spend money on players. People are going to show up anyway.
That seemed to be kind of the MO of previous administrations with that team.
But was that really the case with the Tigers? I mean, when they're in the dregs of MLB, were people really showing up?
No. Oh, I've been to a few games at Comerica Park during that stretch.
Oh, yeah.
And no, people would show up on opening day because it's still the biggest party in Detroit all year, and then...
Gone by seventh inning.
Yeah, and they pretty much would disappear for the rest of the season.
Yep.
That's just kind of how that would go.
Yep.
And I don't want to see a return to that, because you actually started to have people excited about this team for the first time since, well, what, 2014? Like, we haven't had that in a minute. And it was kind of nice. People were actually into it. Like, I went to the game, the game after the Tigers clinched a playoff appearance against Chicago. And, you know, it felt like, you know, it was starting to feel like kind of like it did back in the olden days, back when I was going to those games, like going to multiple games and playoff games at that every year, back when you could still kind of afford to go to playoff games. Remember those days, Adam?
Vaguely.
There was a time that I, on a pizza guy's salary at the time, could afford to go to playoff baseball games. It was a thing. Don't laugh. It was truly a golden era. You know, truly the best of all times to be a Tigers fan.
Yeah. But hopefully it'll get that way again. Hopefully.
Oh, it's never going to be affordable again? Yeah, who are we kidding? Yeah. We live in a dystopian hellscape where that's just never going to be allowed to happen. But I'm hoping that these reports don't tell the full story here, that this team really is looking to build on what last year was, willing to build on being a contender. Like, all right, you've won a playoff series. What's the next step from here? I'm just hoping that the next step isn't back. One more baseball thing I want to get to coming up next is Happy Hour. Stick around. Yeah, I know. Has Sean finally lost his mind? We're like in the peak of the Lions' like best season ever, and he wants to talk baseball. Yeah, I know. Indulge me for a minute, though. Like I said, we covered all of the Lions stuff, the vast majority of the Lions stuff, at least on Friday's show. So I kind of have a few things I wanted to kind of touch on in that realm, if I could. MLB is talking about doing something incredibly stupid. I know. Shocking, right? Like, you never hear about Rob Manfred doing something absolutely ridiculous. That's just never been a thing. Like, he's never made any rule changes that were entirely ill-conceived and ill-thought out.
No, not at all.
But he is talking about doing such a thing. And I hate this. I hate everything about this if it is, in fact, true. He's talking about implementing something called the Golden At-Bat.
Oh, yeah, I read about this.
This basically, for those of you who haven't heard, this would be something where a team could choose one at-bat in every game to send its best hitter to the plate, even if it wasn't that guy's turn to hit. Say there are two outs in the 10th inning in October, the Yankees and Guardians are tied. Does this ring a bell at all? But in this alternate October universe, it's not Juan Soto who's due up, it's, say, Oswaldo Cabrera. Except the Yankees say, no, we're going to use our golden at-bat here and send up Soto, then home run magic happens. One front office exec said, wouldn't have that been the ultimate golden at-bat homer? Can we send Juan Soto up there to do that? He actually did hit that homer in that moment. So should baseball change its rules to attempt to create more of those moments? That's the question. No.
No, I hate absolutely it. Not.
I absolutely hate everything about this idea.
I mean, managers, they're supposed to have their strategy for this, of what pitcher hitters are going to have in rotation, and you stick with that rotation.
I mean, you have guys who come in and pinch hit at whatever, but this would be like a whole different thing. There's apparently a lot of variations that have been tossed about, one where each team gets to pick one at-bat at any point in the game, but only once. Do you use it early? Do you use it late? Or each team gets one per game, but it's only in the seventh inning or later. Or only a team that's trailing or tied in the ninth or later gets to use it.
Wow.
But here's the weird thing. Like, yeah, I think the other thing that this could possibly set up here. You use the at-bat for a guy, you know, put your best hitter in. The turn before it's his actual turn in the lineup. Like, how does that work then?
He gets a bat twice.
Yeah, I think so. Like, that's an actual thing. And I'm sorry, like, I don't like the idea of, you know, it much like when we talked about how cool the game 163 thing was, unless your team's involved in it, hi Tigers Twins.
Yeah, right.
Like, how, you know, it was nice to get like an extra day of baseball or whatever in the year, like a one like showdown like winner take all thing, and then MLB kind of went and ruined it a bit by making it so that happened every year now. The one play-in game or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at least that has, you know, some excitement, having your team play, you know, do or die kind of idea. It's like you're skipping right to a game five or a game seven. But, I mean, this is just asinine.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Like, it seems like you're, like, who doesn't love, like, that big moment, you know, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, you're down to your last strike, and it's your you know, best hitter on the field, or your best hitter is up to bat. Like, you love it when it happens, but I guess, like, the idea of, like, you know, making that, you know, cheapening that by letting them just arbitrarily just do that. Like,
right.
I hate that.
Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, one of the reasons why, you know, bottom of the ninth, your best bat is now at the plate, it's because it doesn't always happen. It's luck of the draw.
Yeah.
It's the manager's strategy working for him, as opposed to the golden ticket, golden buzzer or whatever, and you put in a different batter. I mean, that's just, I don't know. At this point, why have a rotation? Just call out a batter, you know. Don't have a rotation. Just, oh, okay, you first, and we'll see what goes from there.
Yeah, why even have a batting lineup at that point?
Yep.
But, I mean, unless you're the Tigers, in which we don't have a rotation at all. That's why pitching chaos happened last year.
Pitching rotation, batting lineup, gotcha. But, I mean, at this point, why have a batting lineup? Just go ahead and just start naming them at random.
Yep, just call, like, the same four guys, the same three or four guys up every time at the plate. Like, because later in this article in The Athletic about the whole thing, it's mentioned that Rob Manfred had mentioned things about the All-Star game.
Oh, God.
About using it there, potentially. That would be a thing, it would seem. And there were some All-Star game ideas that he had expressed approval for in the past. He says, most of the changes we've discussed involve producing the matchups in the context of an exhibition game that the fans want to see the most. You know, more freedom in terms of substitution and whatnot. I'm receptive to those ideas in the context of an exhibition game.
Fine. It's an All-Star game. Nobody really watches it, so do whatever you want. But in a regular season game, especially when they really start to matter in September and October, no. Leave it alone. Leave the game alone.
Yeah. And also, from what he said there, I feel like opens the door to, okay, it's going to be more than one golden at-bat. Because a few years ago, I guess Fox had tossed out, because I guess Fox somehow gets input on the rules of the All-Star game. Like, that's a thing. Fox had tossed out a slightly different concept that went nowhere at the time, but has since gotten enough traction that someone asked the Athletic's Jason Stark what he thought of it a few months back. Since it's the All-Star game and the biggest stars aren't on the field after the fourth or fifth inning, how about this idea? Before the game, each team could designate three All-Star starters who could re-enter the game in the seventh inning or later. Or each team could throw out like five names and fans could vote on which three could return.
Why don't we just blindfold the batter? How about blindfold the pitcher? There we go.
Well, I mean, there's the whole, like, someone's probably getting hit at that point. Like, hit-by-pitches are going up, like, at an exponential rate at that point.
At the end of the sixth inning, you release the hounds.
I feel like we're not that far from this. You know, like, that's kind of where all of this is headed, dude.
I mean, it's the eighth inning. The outfielders aren't wearing gloves. Being brought to you by Ballpark Franks. They plump when you cook them, and the hands are going to plump when they catch a raw ball. Does Manfred hate baseball this much to where he's sitting there going, man, this is really boring. How do I make this more exciting for me?
Yeah, how can I make this sport stupider? It seems like he just sits down every so often like, how can I actually make baseball worse? And that's apparently just how he does. Like, so it has been an idea. Apparently it's been talked about for a while, I guess. David David Sampson, used to be president of the Marlins, who was criminally incompetent in his job, brought it up a decade ago because, of course, it would be you. Yep. Why wouldn't it be you? You are a terrible general manager. And it went exactly how you'd expect. You're ruining the sanctity of the game. Like, if the right guy, the brilliance of the history of the game is that, hey, if the right guy is up, the right guy is up. And if he's not, he's not. And I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
Like, I do not like the idea of, like, I already wasn't obviously on board with the whole pitch clock thing. Like, the one kind of, you know, cool thing about baseball is that there isn't a time limit on anything. And you've kind of thrown that out the window. So, who really needs the sanctity of the lineup in baseball? Like,
well, see, now the pitch clock I can almost get behind because
sure.
There was a lot of, you know, stepping out of the batter's box, adjusting gloves, right. Doing all this. Everything. But the lineup change? No, knock it off. Are they still doing the batter on second in extra innings?
Yes, they are, and I still hate
it. See, that you got that through for everybody. Everybody hates it. Consider that. Everybody hates what you've done so far. Why do you keep messing with the game? You became the commissioner of baseball. Leave it as baseball.
Yeah, and that one, the extra innings one, was particularly stupid. It's not like increasing offense in and of itself. It's like, okay, we're just putting a runner on second for the hell of it from here on out.
It's to get the games over faster.
Right.
That's all that it is.
Yeah, I feel like if you like baseball, that the goal is not to end a game quicker in and of itself. Like the pitch count thing, I mean, it's not like you're taking any action out of the game. But this is potentially actually, you know, that actually took action out of the game. And this is just pumping action back in a completely artificial manner to ultimately, I feel like, end the games quicker, which, again, seems to be like the MO of this man.
Well, he's probably getting a lot of heat from owners where, you know, okay, we stopped selling concessions right around, this eighth inning?
Yeah.
And then you know, then the game keeps going. We'd like to get people out of there and close up shop.
You know, that's kind of a sad thing if that's the case. We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, and I did promise we would do some Lions talk this afternoon. So I feel like we have to talk a little bit about, well, the Dan Gamble. It's a popular, topic around the league. Like, is Dan Gamble changing the way that NFL football is being played, being coached? It seems kind of that way. And as we get towards the playoffs and really establish the contenders in the NFL, the real Super Bowl contenders, and there's really realistically only about like a handful of those, and the topic is coming up, is Dan Campbell's aggressiveness going to be what sinks this team in the postseason? And particularly this from Mike Sando over at The Athletic. Dan Campbell's fourth down decision in the final minute was the talk of the league in Week 14. It was either smart, reckless, or somewhere in between, which says all we need to know about these decisions. I'm going to tell you right now, just right off the jump here, that decision is one I have absolutely zero issue with. And honestly, I feel like it's doing a disservice to Dan Campbell to, you know, to continually call, oh, that's so reckless, it's such a gamble. You know, I know we make fun of the Dan Gamble thing here on this show, because of course we do.
Sure.
But realistically, there's a lot of, like, analytics and stuff going into these decisions. Like, if you really look at the numbers and you see which play is going to give you better odds and, you know, help the win percentage and everything else, like, these go-for-it calls, like, are 9 times out of 10 the right call, ultimately, to do. The only one I feel like that you can question from Thursday's game we talked about was the one inside your own 30. Like, you're on your own, 29, 30, 31-yard line?
Yeah.
And going for it on fourth down there was probably not smart. I can totally justify having done it, but it did also directly lead to points for Green Bay. But the other one, it's a combination, too. I mean, obviously, the analytic is a big part of it, and the numbers say that you're this much more likely to succeed in going for it in this scenario. But it's also a situational awareness that I don't think people give Dan Campbell a lot of credit for either. Because, look, your team, your defense was absolutely gassed. You've lost everybody. Like, 90% of your defensive line was dead. Like, the only thing, the best, easiest way to come away with the W here was to make sure that the offense had the ball in their hands as much as possible, and in particular that the offense had the ball in their hand at the end of the game for as long as they could. Because if you give Jordan Love 45 seconds to go downfield, you don't know what exactly he's going to do to your coverage. At the very least, they would have stood a very good chance of sending this thing to overtime, had that been the case.
Yep.
And do you really want to make your defense go and play another quarter of football? I think not. That could have resulted in even bigger consequences, you know, coming down the line here. So in that sense, I think it was the right call, certainly, from both an analytics standpoint and just, you know, situational awareness, really. But that being said, it's being talked about again, and ESPN's fourth down model thought the Lions would have been better off trying a 38-yard field goal instead of going for it, but that's keeping in mind, though, that's not taking into consideration just how depleted your defense was. Like, that, the analytics are usually pretty good about these things, but they don't necessarily factor in injuries, guys being worn down and whatever. Like they look at the numbers, and Dan Campbell's better at looking at the numbers than a lot of people in this league are. But all of that being said, an exec from another team told The Athletic's Mike Sandow that Campbell is being reckless and could be at high risk for making a nonsensical decision in a playoff game. Quote, "That's why these models are BS, because nobody knows. It's been an interesting journey for a lot of people who have gone from huge believers in these to thinking we're relying on them too heavily. They've given us a good base to understand risk, but there are so many other factors that you really have to rely on the coach to identify how you want to win the game and execute it." I don't know. I think, for the most part, there are certain things, and it's really part of what's got you here, and I think also there is an argument to be made that's changing the way that coaches are going to coach from here on out, because you're watching these guys go for it and watching it work a lot more often than it has. And I'm going to be fine with, ultimately, if we're talking fourth and one anywhere midfield on, I'm fine with going for it. If we're talking like fourth and three inside the red zone, yeah, I'm fine with going for it. Like, there are a lot of places where it makes a lot of sense to do it that way. Also, you can do it this way because your offense is specifically constructed to do things. No one's better in like short yardage situations at getting a first down than David Montgomery is. Like, we've seen it. Like, you can stack the box against him, and it doesn't entirely matter. He still finds a way to, like, he'll push your D-line back and take that first down from you, whether you want him to or not. Like, you have an offense that is specially built to do things like this. With your I mean, you also have, like, arguably the best O-lineman in the league in Penei Sewell. Like, you have the guys that can force that issue in a short yardage situation. So you can feel very comfortable going for it because you're a team that's built the way that this one is. And it shows, like, they've converted at a 71% rate since 2023 for what it's worth. And then again, you know, like we said, the injuries being what they are. So with that being said, I don't see the issue then that, oh, he's going to do something stupid like where he didn't kick the field goals against San Fran in the NFC title game. I feel like Dan Campbell's learned from his mistakes, and I wouldn't say that he's doing things that are just patently reckless at this point, the fake punt against Minnesota early in that game notwithstanding, that other than he's keeping offenses on their toes and, you know, doing things that they don't expect you to do so you can use them against them later, and like, okay, well, we can't sell out to do this, to stop this now, because he might just do something dumb like that instead. There's something to be said for that, I think, in this game, and I think it's honestly the way he manages these situations is really changing the way, like, you're seeing it happen more. You saw it in Sunday's game. Sean McVay was doing a lot of going for it on fourth down where he would normally have kicked a field goal at any other point in time against the Bills. Like, you're starting to see it catch on around the league. Everyone's been just mocking this man just mercilessly for some of the decision making, some of the play calling. But I really think he's, in fact, he's the man's crazy like a fox. And for the, you know, other coaches are gonna have to, other, you know, league execs, whatever, are gonna have to finally start admitting this, I think.
Well, I mean, we touched on it on Friday. He trusts their players. The players trust him. It looks like he's all willy-nilly. He looks like he's taking a gamble, but it's a calculated risk.
And there is a difference between the two.
Yeah.
But it's not as much fun to, you know, say a Dan calculated risk on the radio.
Right. I do love the memes. He's dealt a 20 on blackjack. He's like, hit me. Rolls a 95 on the wheel. Wheel on the
Price is Right.
And he's like, I'm going to spin again.
Like, it's really, it's becoming a thing, and I am 110% here for it because, you know, these things get said out there. Like, you know, Teddy Bruschi was on ESPN just, you know, assailing this team and what they do and the way they do it. Like, you guys don't know. Like, you're not here watching this team on an every week basis. Like, they're not paying attention. They weren't paying attention to the Lions before. They have watched, you know, maybe a game or two that was like a national game, but they don't know. You have all the armchair pundits jumping in, acting like they know exactly what this team is.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they watched one game and or one play and decided, yep, this is what the Lions do, because they don't watch them like we do. They don't watch them like people in this state, in Detroit, in this area do. They don't know. They're not watching in and out. They don't come in seeing the massive list of defenders that were unable to go on Thursday and the ones that were getting injured in game. Like, they don't watch and see that, you know, David Montgomery is the best, like, short yardage running back in this league. Like, if you have a fourth and short situation, that he is the guy that you want there more than probably anybody. And that this team as a whole is just built for this in a different way. Like, we see these things because we watch this team, like, every week. They don't, because they've become accustomed, by and large, to not having to pay attention to the Lions over the years. Like, oh, whatever, it's the Lions. This doesn't matter. They don't care. Now that they're a Super Bowl contender, everyone's got to get their hot takes ready and pretend like they've been following this thing the whole time, when we all know they haven't.
Right. As soon as he takes a gamble, quote unquote, and it blows up in his face, which is going to happen. I mean, between now and the big barbecue, it's going to happen at least once. You're going to see everybody say, oh, see, I told you. I told you that was going to happen.
Oh, yeah, they're all going to pile on. The second that something like that happens, you're going to have the screaming A. Smiths of the world just absolutely pile on top of them. You had, you know, former Detroit sports scribe Rob Parker going off about him the other week, but quite frankly, that man hasn't had a relevant sports take in like 15 years. So
he's still doing a job. Well, good for him.
I know. Isn't that lovely? But, like, you know, it's the people that so want to be right about him that just think of him as the meathead that wanted to bite kneecaps off on in his introductory press conference and then didn't bother to pay attention to another single thing about him.
Yeah. They got their headline, and that was it.
That's all they needed. Well, it's like, how long do we say that about Jared Goff, too? Like, you had him get traded out of L.A. for Matt Stafford, and then, you know, we just wrote the book on, especially after Stafford won a Super Bowl out there, like, well, clearly the Rams won this trade. Jared Goff's trash. We didn't want him here, and, you know, because they were so wrong about him just not being a competent NFL QB, it took really until probably this season for people to finally get that, yeah, this guy is playing at an elite level. It took that long to figure out that, no, maybe the Lions did win that trade after all. And if you manage to put a ring on it here, I think you can conclusively say that that was the case. And you didn't have to mortgage your team's, like, next decade to do it. Who knew? I don't know. Like, I just look at it, and maybe it's because, like I said, we're more used to seeing it here. Like, we have a front row seat to this thing week in and week out, but this isn't just some dumb meathead that, you know, like the riverboat gambler. Like, that's not him. Like, there is a lot that goes into these things. Like I said, the analytics back up the vast majority of the calls that he has made, the going for it. And that's in a normal situation with two normal, healthy teams with their normal starting lineups going up against each other. That's not factoring in all the other things, like the trying to, you know, win the possession game and not give Green Bay another chance to get their offense on the field to tear up your depleted defense even further. Like, there are things like that that don't get taken into consideration, A, from an analytics standpoint, and B, from the pundit standpoint. They don't see that, oh, well, we just lost yet another defensive lineman, and if we have to go out and stop Jordan Love again, it may not end up so well. Like, they don't see any of that stuff, because, again, they don't pay attention, because they've never had to acknowledge the Lions until now. It's just been all about, you know, how great Kansas City is, and we've never had to think any harder than that.
Yep.
That's kind of sad that that's, but that's kind of the nature of, you know, the whole punditry thing in and of itself, honestly.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to find themselves being very, very wrong about the Dan Gamble by the time all is said and done. We got to hit a break. It is Happy Hour, your local alternative, Solid State Radio. Normally I'd say I feel like I've deprived you of this long enough, but today I feel like in your head you're begging me not to do this to you. But you have no choice. As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey. Five-game losing streak, eh?
Oh, yeah. About to quite possibly be six games. They play the Buffalo Sabres, which is usually a time for Tage Thompson just to eat the Super Mario mushroom and become larger than life.
He's very good at that.
Yep. So they're taking on the Buffalo Sabres, I believe.
Billy Huso is going to make his fourth straight start.
Oh, good. Maybe he'll actually win one, because I think he's 0-3.
Correct.
Well, yeah, they're in Buffalo, so jump through a flaming table for us, Wings, won't you, please?
Do something. Just it does seem, by the way, rather apparent at this point that they are not going to play Sebastian Cosa unless it's absolutely necessary. Like, they, despite having him up here and Derek Lalonde giving him the vote of confidence the other day, that there is absolutely no circumstance under which Cosa is going to be allowed to start a game. He did hint that Thursday he could if Cam Talbot and Alex Lyon are still out, but they were both skating today, so I wouldn't expect it unless something just absolutely horrendous. Like, unless Huso gets blown out in the first period. Which he's only given up two goals in each of the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
And then, really, he's only given up two goals in regulation over his last four starts, you know, per game. Like, obviously gave up winners, you know, the winning goals in overtime in those first two.
Yep.
But he's only given up two goals in any of his, each of his last four starts in regulation. So, I mean, realistically, other than the Vancouver game, because, okay, you only faced 18 shots.
Yeah.
And that was the best you could do. I'm not happy with that.
No. I mean, we've talked about it with the Sebastian Cosa project. You really don't want his first NHL experience to be when you're down 3-0 in the first period. We want to know he's starting. We want to tune in at the very the drop of the puck and know that he's in net.
I would like that too.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know what the problem is.
Is we're not scoring.
Huso, not Hosa. How you doing? They're not scoring, so, I mean,
like, you're not going to win too many games when you only put up one goal.
Right. They're going to have to figure out something. I'm trying to remember what player that they were talking about that he needs a call-up. Not Bergeron. Anyway, but Cosa, I don't know why they're being so stingy with that, because, I mean, he can play up to, like, I believe 9 games before it takes a year off of his contract. So let him get a few, especially if you know you've got Lyon and Cam Talbot coming back. Put him in there.
To be fair, also, do you really want his first start to be a loss? Because the way this team's scoring, or really not right now, it's guaranteed to be a loss, even if he only gives up one or two saves. And then all of a sudden, he's going to be the problem.
I don't think the wheels are going to go crazy
about that.
Oh, yeah, probably. Well,
Cut him for the team. Yeah, cut Cosa. He's a bum.
Yeah, he's a bum. But that's the way they've always been with goalies. I mean, it's just nature of the beast.
Like, it's not even,
I want someone to be excited for this team. I mean, they go out there and they're passing perfect. Great job. You're doing some great passing, but shoot the puck. Look for the rebounds. Play better in your own zone. Work on that penalty kill.
Wouldn't that be something? God, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I believe the Wings are 1 point away from the basement in the Eastern Conference. A couple points away from being dead last in the NHL. Thank you, Chicago, for jumping on that grenade for us.
You're 1 point ahead of Montreal, and Montreal is currently dead last in the East. At what point, if they do sink below the Habs and become dead last in the East, I mean, you're not going to be dead last in the league because I think Chicago has committed to the bit there, and they are going to keep on that for as long as they possibly can. But how long do you think until it, like, if this keeps up, how long until Lalonde's getting fired out of a cannon at intermission?
I think if they move him, it's going to be in the offseason. I really do. I don't think they're going to do it in midseason. That just doesn't seem like the Wings' MO.
Why couldn't it be?
I mean, even
why can't it be just this once their MO?
Yeah,
that's all I'm asking
for. Come on, Steve. Can we do it? We'll do it on pay-per-view. Bring out the catapult.
It'd make some money. It'd put butts in the seats.
I mean, maybe at this point, are they thinking, do we have a first-round pick this time?
I assume so.
Maybe that's what they're thinking now at this point. So they're letting old Newsy just go ahead and everything.
Why even bother with that, though? Because you know as well as I do that the Wings are not going to be allowed to get the number one overall pick. That's not how this works.
Yeah,
are you new here?
That is very true. I guess I'm looking for a silver lining, and I just can't seem to find it.
Yeah, so you're currently you hold pick number 5 in this year's draft. You do have a first round pick, and just because sometimes I like to do this for fun, hit the Tankathon Sim Lottery.
Yeah.
Oh, would you look at that? Detroit actually moves down 2 spots.
Oh, of course.
Shuffle it again. Okay, you lose 1 spot. Oh, you're not actually going to get second overall. How many times would I have to hit this thing for it to turn up with the Wings as number one?
Well, we only got a couple hours of the show, so I don't know.
Yeah, I could do this literally for the rest of the broadcast, and I'm never going to get him above 5th overall. If anything, I could probably get him down to 16th by the time we get off the air.
Would they give it to Chicago again? Would that be a thing?
Of course they're going to give it to Chicago. You know as well as I do that Chicago is absolutely getting the number one pick.
I mean, what is a new rule? They can't have... Because they changed it. You can't have the first number one pick.
The Edmonton Oilers rule?
Yeah. So I can't remember what it is. I think you can't have it more than 3 times in a row or something like that. So, I mean, Chicago still could get it.
Yeah, they're still in play right now.
Connor Bedard could get a buddy to play with.
Well, then he might potentially have to give up, you know, being the Connor Bedard Chicago Blackhawks sponsored by Connor Bedard at that point. Are there actually other people on this team other than Connor Bedard?
Yeah, apparently, because I was reading that all the negativity about one Tyler Bertuzzi. They said that he's really fell out of favor with the Chicago Blackhawks, and that seems to be wherever he plays. He fell out of favor in Detroit, in Boston, in Toronto, and now in Chicago.
Well, did he really fall out of favor here, per se? It was mostly that he just couldn't stay healthy. Like, that was the main thing.
Well, I've heard a lot of grumbling. Of course, I hear grumbling about everybody.
Well, yeah, you spend enough time on social media, you'll hear grumbling about everybody.
Literally everything. So, I don't know. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't think Yzerman's really the let's tank for the number one pick kind of guy. He wants to win. He's a competitor. And I just, to answer your question, how soon? It should be in a couple days ago. But they'll probably see what happens and make a decision in the offseason. But in the meantime, we're watching this very lackluster hockey, and it really shouldn't be
speak for yourself on the watching lackluster hockey.
I'm still a sucker. I'll be watching it at least
you
the first
sucker,
period.
But that's why we like here.
But I mean, they still got Lucas Raymond. He's doing well. They got they've got Larkin. They've got DeBrincat. They've got Kane. I mean, they've got a team, but they just not playing with any kind of fire. And that's where it starts with the coaching. The coaching's got to come up there and get the team fired up, get them ready to start on time. Not, okay, let's go ahead and start the game and then hopefully tire the other team out. You're not talented enough for that. Your division is too strong. You're one of the hardest divisions in the league.
Yeah, this is not a division in which you can start 20 minutes late.
No.
Like, you got to play, like, here we go back to the cliche machine again. You got to play a full 60 minutes of hockey.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not doing that. Like, scoring, just offense isn't on the menu at all right now.
No. No, they're not. They lost 2-1 against in that last game.
They lost 2-1 in each of their last two.
Oh, boy.
They have scored in their last, I believe their last, well, those are just the starts that Huso's had, which is the last three for sure.
Yikes,
yeah, 2-1, 2-1, 3-2 in overtime. You had a couple games where they scored four goals, and still, and somehow those are the nights when the goaltending wouldn't work for them.
We'll have to see. I mean, because it's not getting any better. Well, I can't really say there's a team where they should. Oh, absolutely, they should definitely win, because you got Buffalo, who, you know, we talked about at the start of the jump, that Buffalo always seems to find an extra gear when they're playing the Wings. Then you got Philly on Thursday, and then Toronto on Saturday. It's not getting any easier.
Yeah, then you're back to Philly. You have a home and home against the Habs.
That could give you a little
that
something.
That could be the thing that ultimately, I feel like if that could be the thing that just seals Derek Lalonde's fate.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's a very good possibility. If they drop both of those games against what is currently the worst team in the East,
yep,
maybe that's what's finally needed here. And I don't want to root for the Wings to lose. Like, I was hoping after last year coming that close to tasting the playoffs again that we wouldn't be in this mess, but yet that's exactly where we find ourselves, apparently.
I am... Hope springs eternal, and I think that they're going to... Fine, they're going to kick it in gear. They're going to be like the St. Louis Blues, who, you know, they were at the bottom of the league in January, came back and won the Stanley Cup. That could be the Red Wings.
I hope you're right. I really do. Like, we don't see the worst to first thing very often. We have seen it a few times over the years, but am I particularly inclined to believe it'll happen? Not necessarily. We got to hit a break. We'll close things off with any NFL overreactions next. So shocking, I know, but things did happen in the National Football League that were not, the Lions, especially because they played Thursday. There's a whole slate of games on Sunday. Things happened. People overreact to them because that is just what we do in this business. We overreact to literal everything.
Yep.
So here I am to tell you what's fact, what's fiction, and what's somewhere in between. Let's overreact to some things, shall we? Maestro of the music, please.
Okay, this week's overreaction Monday starts with the Vikings. The Vikings made the right call moving on from Kirk Cousins. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
You know, I'm hesitant to say it's reality, but considering they've somehow, with Sam Darnold, managed to do every bit as good as they probably would have done with Kirk Cousins and then some, it's hard to argue against it. I mean, right now Cousins is sitting on a 4-game losing streak with Michael Penix Jr. breathing over his shoulder. But at this point, they seem very clear on, at least as of right now, that they weren't going to pay the ridiculous amount of money that Cousins ultimately ended up getting. Whether it was the right move, in the short term, it certainly seems that way. In the long term, it's going to depend whether J.J. McCarthy's actually good. I'm still not convinced that he's going to be. Like, it kind of was always going to be the case where you had to move on from McCarthy, ultimately. Like, you want a younger guy. I mean, Cousins may have a couple seasons left of life in him, but you know, at some point, when it comes to these things, you got to start looking at the future, and it was very much, I think, a necessity for them to do what they did the way they did it. Unfortunately for Cousins, it may end up with him being on the outs with yet another team very quickly. But, yeah, I would say that's absolutely reality.
All right, the Titans will be in the QB market again this offseason. Reality or overreaction?
they gave Will Levis every chance at this point, no? I mean, you can't say at all that they haven't given him every chance to prove that he should be the guy. And he just has not been able to be consistent. Obviously, there was a, there's an argument to be made. He wasn't this coaching staff's choice. He was hired under the, or drafted under the previous regime. Then they blew everybody out and brought in Brian Callahan. And Brian Callahan's given him his shot to prove that he can stick with the gig, and it just hasn't gone well. They somehow lost to the Jags 10-6. It was uglier than all hell. Levis had 168 yards on the day, completing 19 of his 32 passes, no touchdowns, and then got injured. Not injured enough to keep him out, but injured nonetheless. And then made a turnover that had Callahan like yelling at him on the sideline. Like, it's the sort of thing that's costing your team games, like, to a massive degree. And you can't beat the Jags. Like, the Jags don't even have, like, they don't have Trevor Lawrence going for them. Like, they're, like, that's a depleted team that's also kind of a dumpster fire. How do you lose to them? Honestly. Like, you've given him more than enough time to prove that he can handle, and maybe this is another one of those situations where maybe he shouldn't have been the starter right out of the jump. I could certainly see an argument being made there. But, such as it is, yeah, they need to move on from him. Like, you're going to be looking for somebody else next year, and as bad as their record is, you stand a very good chance of getting a high enough draft pick that you could go and do that. Yeah, that... I don't think Levis is going to make it in this league.
Where's Levis from? Where did he go to college?
He went to school at Kentucky. So that's a... But that being said, I don't know. Like, he's just not... Like, he didn't show much in the first year. Like, he threw 8 touchdowns and 4 picks and, you know, 9 games that he started then. And has an abysmal completion percentage between the two seasons. Like... And the touchdown to pick ratio is only getting worse. The boneheaded just decisions are getting worse as his career goes on. I'm not gonna say he'll never be an NFL caliber QB, but it's definitely gonna take a few years as a journeyman backup here, now taking the Sam Darnold route to get, I think, to the point where any team's gonna be willing to start him. Because Tennessee certainly shouldn't be doing it after this year.
Geno Smith is going to get a contract extension from the Seahawks this offseason. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
I don't think so. I would say that's certainly an overreaction right now. I mean, I will say, to his credit, going into Sunday night's game, Geno is first in the NFL in passing yards, fifth in completion rate, and he has done more than enough to secure the starting gig in Seattle since Russell Wilson got traded. He's got 1 year left on his deal. I don't think this is this offseason that this is going to be happening. Because the Seahawks don't strike me as a team that's going to go and overpay him. Like, he was the starter in Seattle basically because Russ wanted to get paid. And they weren't willing to do that, so they shipped him out of town. And Geno was kind of the bargain basement option because at this point, he kind of washed out with the Jets as a starter. He wasn't seemingly being taken seriously by anybody. And really, I didn't think that Geno would ever get a chance to start on a regular basis for an NFL team again after he bombed out with the Jets. But he came in here. He took over. It was giving them plenty of value for what they were paying him. I don't see Seattle being particularly inclined to spend the kind of money it would take to lock him up. Also, he's 34 years old. Like, long term, how long is a guy who has the particular skill set he does, a guy who is very much, you know, a mobile QB and plays the way he does? I don't see them giving that kind of money. If they weren't going to do it to Russ, who was 33 at the time they traded him, I'm not inclined to believe they're going to do it to Geno at 34.
Let's talk about the stupid Rams.
Okay. I love talking about the stupid Rams.
All right. No one is going to want to face the Rams in the NFC playoffs. Overreaction, or is this reality?
Look, I get that we're really trying to sell the stupid Rams up for whatever reason, and that, like, Sean McVay, obviously, has done quite a fantastic job as coach out there. I mean, he's got him a ring and everything else. With this, that you're sitting a game behind Seattle in the division right now, one game behind Washington in the wild card, you're probably going to get to the playoffs based on, like, everyone's finally healthy again. And they're really just firing on all cylinders as much as anybody. But, that being said, they did just give up 42 points to a team that ran only 54 plays in the game. And they gave up, like, when they're giving up the kind of points that they were, I can't necessarily give you, I can't say that you're a huge threat to make a run here. The offense is hot right now, and you can never really question the or count out the possibility that Matt Stafford's just going to drive the team downfield and score when they need to. But the defense doesn't have the ability to stop anybody. I don't think this defense could stop the Lions. I don't think they could stop the Eagles. I don't think you're stopping the Vikings. Also, for what it's worth, you're not stopping the Packers, and they have lost to three of those four teams this season. You may remember that they did lose to the Lions earlier in the year. Like, I'm not saying they're not going to make the playoffs. I think there is a very good chance they could make a run there. But do I fear them in the playoffs in the way I would fear fear a team like the Lions? No. Do I fear them, quite frankly, any more than the Eagles, the Packers, or the Vikings, none of whom I fear the Lions going up against? No. If the Lions met the Rams again in the playoffs, they'd blow them out. Or at least would be a shootout game. I don't think for a second, like, no one's afraid of the Rams. That's dumb. Sorry. Not buying it. What else you got for me, Adam?
Got one more for you. Bryce Young will be the Panthers' week one starter in 2025.
Yeah, it would seem that way. I mean, there's a number of QBs you could you could draft. I mean, obviously you're going to be, I think it's very likely at this point you're going to have the number one overall pick next year. The way this team has been playing, I fully expect that to be the case. But I also don't think if whoever ends up coaching here is smart, I don't think you're starting whoever they draft right away. Currently they are projected to draft fourth per Tankathon, and they think that they're going to take Mason Graham, the defensive lineman out of Michigan. I think they could draft a QB if Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders or whoever ends up being available, depending on where they end up picking. But I don't think that whoever that is ends up starting day one. They shouldn't. If they're smart, they should let Bryce Young continue to at least try and build on what he's attempting to build on here. Like, he didn't start out good. A lot of us, I think, were convinced that he was going to be benched for good when Andy Dalton got the start and only got his job back because Dalton got in a car accident. He's improved a lot from where he was. And I would fully expect that going into next season, even if they don't really think that he's a long-term guy going forward, I think they're going to probably start him next year, let whoever ends up getting drafted, if anybody, sit on the bench and learn from experience, as opposed to what they did here, which was throwing him into a no-win situation, and if this whole thing goes south, it's all your fault.
Right.
At some point, though, you gotta kind of, if you're David Tepper, at what point do you pick a management team, a coach, whatever, and roll with it for more than a year? Remember, Bryce Young's already gone in two seasons, has gone through two head coaches. He had Frank Reich his first year. He had Dave Canales currently this year, and I sadly wouldn't be surprised if Dave Tepper gives him the boot. Like, at what point do you just let someone have more than 5 seconds to turn your squad around? I mean, I know we're sitting here thinking, like normal, like sane people, and not someone who has more money than sense. But come on, at some point, you have to let someone develop a culture, like build a team. You know, what would have happened? The Lions would have just given up on Dan Campbell after the first season. You wouldn't have what you're at right now. You would have gone full on into another rebuild. Whether or not Frank Reich was the right guy, whether or not Dave Canales is the right guy, I don't know. Certainly, it's hard to say. I don't know if I can go out and say that he for sure is. But at what point can you actually hire people and trust them to put together a game plan and let them implement it without constantly, you know, if this thing goes south, like right now, you're going to be fired? At some point, that's just... That's not really fair to them. It's not fair to Bryce Young. Like, who's going to be able to thrive in that system? Like, right. Who's going to thrive in a situation where, okay, we're changing the scheme completely from year to year because we don't know who's going to be coaching, and they're going to implement a completely different style from the guy that you were brought in under? It's just such a dysfunctional situation that I really truly hope for the sake of that team and for Bryce Young that he is the guy next year, at least to start off. Like, whether you go and look for somebody else, okay, that's fine, but you got to at least let him come in one season with a little bit of, you know, with not having the pressure of the second that things go awry, we're going to bench you again. Otherwise, you're just going to break the dude, like they basically about broke Anthony Richardson in Indy. It's not the way you do these things. It's not the way that you build a culture and a winning organization. We're just about out of time. Stick around. A full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. All being well. Talk to you tomorrow at 3. See ya.